they're going to be digital employees working next to us. And we are already seeing that. They have actually started to identify AI agents as a virtual employee, because just like human being, the agents that come in to work for a company needs to understand the specific terms and the policies. So we are trying to make them go through the same validation, same training, or same management as a human employee.
Hello and welcome back to Where AI Works, conversations at the intersection of AI and industry, brought to you by the Wharton School in collaboration with Accenture. And I'm your host, Peter Capelli. I'm a professor of management at the Wharton School and director of our Center for Human Resources. It's our goal to cut through the noise and deliver insights that are actionable for business leaders. We're going to do this by combining research with real-world case studies. Things are changing fast. So without further ado, let's dive in.
AI impacts not just operational processes, but it also impacts the workforce.
64% of workers are confident now in their ability to use AI on the job.
I think that AI is going to make a big impact on jobs and on workplaces.
These tools are incredible. They are so powerful. And if you aren't adopting or using it, you are falling behind.
On this episode, I'm excited to get us into the issue of how do changes when we introduce AI really work? What's different? What's the effects on employees in particular? What we've been learning here is increasingly that's kind of where the action is. It's not the AI per se, it's this intersection. Joining me for today's conversation is Vivian Sun, Senior Director for Data and AI, Enterprise Architecture and IT Transformation at Jabil Incorporated. Vivian, thanks for being here and welcome to Where AI Works.
Thank you, Peter. It's such an honor to speak in this podcast, especially coming back to the school I studied at, Wharton. So I'm very, very happy and it's a pleasure to come back.
Thank you. I was going to point out, but Vivian beat me to it, that she's a Wharton alumnus, but she's also got three different degrees from the University of Pennsylvania, two engineering degrees, as well as the Wharton degree. So the big question, Vivian, is when you get 2 degrees, is the third one free?
Actually, yes.
Was it really?
But it was not waived. It was actually paid by the company I worked for.
Oh, very nice.
I might be getting the fourth one too.
Oh, wonderful.
In the future.
Well, that's good to know. We'll keep the door open. I wanted to just ask you a little bit about your own career, because you are right at the heart of what everything is doing now. Everybody's talking about this intersection. Did you start out thinking that you would be at this intersection? Or tell me a little about your career, because I know you worked in Hong Kong and other places before landing back here in the U.S. at Jabil. We'll talk about Jabil in a minute, but tell me about your path.
I actually never imagined I would be working with artificial intelligence, because back in engineering school, there was actually a course called artificial intelligence, but we didn't know much about it. It was also not a course that a lot of people didn't take the course. So what led me to where I'm doing now is the transformation characteristic of my career, because even though I worked at different companies and different locations in Asia, in the US, there has always been the notion of managing transformation at different companies. So it naturally leads to where I'm transforming now, which is utilizing AI to improve our business, to bring the business values, right? So I have held many different positions. I managed large teams. I managed the big operations. But what always have interested me is managing the change itself, because we know the only thing that's not going to change is the change itself. So that's how I started AI, transform myself and the company utilizing AI about 5 years ago, starting from a very first use case until now where we are scaling AI solutions for Jabil.
Let's talk about Jabil for a bit. This is the biggest company that no one has heard of, or I confess I didn't know who they were. 140,000 employees, and it's US-based, right? But it's all over the world now. Is that right, roughly?
Yeah, it's the largest listed company in Florida, and okay. We have 100 plants worldwide. We have over 400 customers, and we employ 140,000 people.
And what you do as a company is also at the heart of what people are talking about today, at least in the US, and policy, right? And this is manufacturing. So you're a company that makes stuff and helps other companies manufacture stuff. Have I got that right?
Yeah, we're a contract manufacturer.
Contract manufacturer, right. So you're at the heart of all this discussion about making manufacturing back in the U.S. and building it up and all that stuff. So you're at the heart of this AI discussion in a company that's at the heart of the manufacturing conversation. So you're just at the heart of everything. So let's maybe back you up a little bit. You were saying before that 5 years ago is when this transformation with AI started. What was the transformation around AI that began this path, at least at Jabil?
So in early ages, even before the 5 years, we started on machine learning, trying to understand more stories from big amount of data. Around 5 years ago, we feel like everybody's talking about AI. So we, as a group, sat down in the conference room trying to define what is our strategy. Yes, we want to embrace AI, but where should we start? So in that meeting, we started to identify three different AI technologies we should be concentrating on. The first one is AI computer vision. The reason we identify AI computer vision is a capability where we want to get into, because one, it is very widely utilized in the manufacturing environment for inspections, and also because it's more deterministic than other AI technologies. And the second group is machine learning, where we want to understand what the data will bring to us, help us transform, help us conduct preventive maintenance. And the third area is on generative AI. At the time, it's more of the big language models that we're looking at to help us be able to talk to AI utilizing the model.
Can I back you up on a section?
Yeah.
Just on the first one. So machine learning, listeners probably know this is kind of data science is statistics for engineers, right? Where you're trying to usually look at big data to solve problems which are not well defined, and you're looking for causation, not necessarily theoretical explanations. The first one was, again, computer vision. So can you just make sure we all know what computer vision means in this context? This is optical scanning stuff. What do we mean by that?
It is optical, but it is using AI models to improve the optical technologies. For example, understanding the color of a product. A traditional optical technology might understand blue versus yellow, but there are subtle differences between more a little bit blue or less blue, right? Human eyes can recognize that, but maybe not traditional optical technology.
Okay. And so where that is useful might be if you are producing stuff that's supposed to be colored and you want to make sure that it's exactly right.
Right. Quality control and quality inspections. And we also utilize it in inspecting the cosmetic errors. So the products that we make, we actually hire many inspectors to look at if there are scratches, if there are dirt or dent on the product. And traditionally, we have used human to do that. Now we are utilizing AI in many of the cases.
And as you're saying this, it strikes me one of the interesting things about manufacturing here is, unlike other areas trying to use AI, is that you know what the right answer is in manufacturing, right?
Exactly.
You know the color that you want. You know what the image should look like. And that makes it conceptually simpler, I guess, but you've also got to be right.
Exactly. That's why I said it's more deterministic, because you know what is not a good product, what is a good product. So that AI computer vision become a entry point for us to get into AI, right? Because normally AI, it's difficult to understand how AI made decisions. But using AI computer vision, when we know the results, and we don't have to understand how AI made the decisions, but if the results is good or not.
So Vivian, can you just walk us through maybe the first execution of this at Jabil when you started with computer vision? What did it look like before and what did it look like after?
So in manufacturing, most of the people hear about is how we produce things. In the process, the visual inspection is a very crucial step. Before the product goes out of the door, every single product has to go through many steps of inspections. Some are testing out the capabilities of the machine, making sure it's functional. And there is another group of inspections that we need to make sure the product cosmetically is up to the quality. We make sure that the right labels are sticked onto the product in the right arrangement. All of those were done previously by people. Although it's very important, it's also very tedious and tiring for people to do. We used to hire inspectors who have to spend 20 seconds on the same product, looking at where the defects are. It is not an easy job. Because of that, it's also very difficult to hire people to come here and inspect those products. So it made the job much more difficult for our HR, especially during the peak seasons. So after we implemented the AI solution, of course, we were able to remove people from those repetitive and non-value add work. They were able to then concentrate on jobs that they'd like to do. And also it improves our inspection qualities and saved time for our HR department. Now they don't have to look for as many inspectors that they used to have.
And just to point out to our listeners, the psychological process of doing repetitive and boring tasks is called habituation. And that means that you just start to tune it out. When you see the same thing over and over and over and over, it's really, really hard to pay attention. It's not, as you say, something that humans were very good at. So when you introduced this, and you were saying earlier this was kind of an entryway into AI, was this because the leadership and your stakeholders could see the benefits of it? Is that why it was kind of the entry point?
Yes, we were actually implementing solutions using other technologies at the same time.
Okay.
For example, machine learning, for example, big language models. But this area, it was more of the shorter wing for us comparing to other technologies because it was so direct impact to our business. So people can see the result immediately. And that brings the confidence of the AI technology. So it was a live case to educate everybody the possibility of AI with this very small capability that AI has. So we were able to gain more attention from our executives, right? Even our customers. And so they trust us in continuing the pursuing of AI technology into other manufacturing or other core functional teams.
Yeah, it's a great point that this is an organizational challenge. It's not just a technical challenge. You have to persuade the finance department to give you the money for this. You have to persuade the investors that it's going to be worth the money. And if you're waving hands, it's a harder act to sell. But if they can literally start seeing examples, you're off to be able to do other things. Can we shift a little and talk about machine learning? And that is, what example was maybe the first of the applications that you folks at Jabil used?
So a very first one, I have to go back to the product color because we have this one customer is very strict on having the exact color they want. So when we dye the color in the solutions, because of the environmental collection, we have to put the solutions outdoor. And because it's outdoor, chemicals in there is prone to changes of weather. For example, if it's raining, the solution composite is different. So we have been using our employees who are very, very familiar with the process, and they can tell as experts with what temperature or level of raining, amount of chemical deposits they put into the solution. So what we did is we installed sensor into the solutions and collected the data. And we use the data to analyze the weather information to be able to tell or suggest correct amount of solutions to guide our workers so we can get the exact color.
So let me make sure I got that. It's a great point. So we have in many organizations what our colleague Sid Winter at Wharton used to call tacit knowledge. And that is some understanding which is hard to explain to other people. And in your context here, it was understanding how the weather will change the color. What you did is gather as much information as you could about the weather and about the compounds you're working with, then look for relationships between them. And then at the end, you get an algorithm that says, if the weather is doing this, adjust the color this way.
Right.
How long did it take for you to figure that out, to get to the point where the algorithm was about as good as your employees on that?
The project actually lasted for 2 years because every color is different. So we can make a better prediction for certain colors, but not all of the colors, mm-hmm. right? That leads back to my argument about AI is really to make people more intelligent. It's assisting people, but it cannot replace people in many senses today. So we need to be very conscious after learning for a long time, understand where we should apply the technology and where we should not, right? I think that's a very important learning that we also obtained from that project.
It sounds to me like the point is sometimes you could do it with machine learning and other tools, but it might be really expensive and time consuming if you have to build a different model for every color, for example, right? Can you give us another machine learning example?
We are a manufacturing company, so we have hundreds, thousands of parts that's shifting across the world all the time. And it's very important for us to understand the export-import policies of every single country, especially in the situation that we have now. So it's very important for our supply chain people to be able to identify the right code that we should apply to the product. Before, we had people, tens of people, trying to identify that code. And it's very time-consuming and it's very prone to mistakes, inconsistencies. So originally, what we did is we used the machine learning and learn about the decisions that people made so we can predict and suggest to our employees what might be a possible code that they can utilize. We spent a long time to do this project. As we were saying, machine learning actually takes a lot of time because data collection alone, we had come to the point that it's accurate enough that our business team decided to accept and make it a co-pilot of our supply chain people, which is good. But we are in the process of even making it more accurate, right? That's where we apply generative AI, which is the third pillar that of AI technologies we use here. So in addition to the prediction, we're also utilizing generative AI to be able to interrogate the documents using a chatbot.
Tell me if I've got this right. So you're trying to figure out what are the relevant trade policies and approaches. You look at what your employees have decided to do, and you look at the context around it. And so from that, you kind of build a model that say, when the context looks like this, this is the right code. And so you built that, and you can see how that would not just save a lot of time, but would be far more accurate.
Right.
So now you can move us to the generative AI part from there.
So now because the technology has advanced, everybody knows about chatbot. So we have added one more solution on top of our original utilizing machine learning. Even though machine learning can do some good predictions, but we cannot validate, we cannot absolutely sure that it's a right import-export code. So we added on utilizing the generative AI technology to interrogate the document to see what the chatbot would return. So if we get the same answer from the machine learning and also the chatbot, there's a higher chance that it's a correct one.
Good. So this is kind of using the generative AI tools to interrogate, look at it again, look at the document, see if the algorithm is right or if you've missed something. So it's a check on the algorithm, but it's also a way to see whether maybe there's something new in the document or something that we didn't catch when we originally coded it up. So it's kind of a quality thing. And it's an interesting idea, right, that you might get disagreements between machine learning and generative AI,
right,
which somebody's got to step in and decide. So if you were to look out, say, 2 years from now, what things are you working on now in the company that you think within a year or two, we're going to see something, a different application, a different innovation here?
I think it's the explosion of AI agents. They're going to be digital employees working next to us. And we are already seeing that. Giving an example of Workday, which is a SaaS software providing HR services, they have actually started to identify AI agents as a virtual employee. Because just like human being, the agents that come in to work for a company needs to understand the specific terms and the policies. So by identifying that agent in Workday, we are trying to make them to go through the same validation, same training, or same management as a human employee. I believe that's going to happen because if you look at how agentic AI is transforming the world, it's going to start to take over the decision makings. It's going to take actions instead of human to replace repetitive actions, being able to communicate with people internally and externally. And it's going to be everywhere in every single industry, in our work, in our life. So because of the impact it brings to business, there will be a huge explosion.
Just so our listeners are clear, what we mean here when we're talking about agents, we're not talking about robots sitting at desks. We're talking about large language tools or generative AI tools that do specific things that we can plug into the work stream. It doesn't necessarily even take the employee out of the chair that they're in now, but it takes over some of those tasks. And the great trick will be to figure out which agents you can insert in which jobs in order to make the work maybe even easier,
right,
but more accurate and
right,
perform better. Yeah. And a last question, Vivian, since you've been through this process in a company where you're using it a lot already, if you had advice for other companies that are just getting started on this, what would you tell them from your own experience?
Yeah, I have a few suggestions. I think number one suggestion is to start from the business value instead of the technology. We're trying to use the technology to solve a problem. We're not trying to build a use case because we want to use the technology. And it is also very important to keep track of the value because as we iteratively build or train an AI model, there will be many factors that could change. Like continuously making sure we keep up the value would be able to guarantee that at the end, the AI solution will meet the expectation of value generation. That's one. Start small, but think big. I talked about starting small and prioritize lower hanging fruits so we can prove the value to the organization, our employees, and then the customers. But don't always stay there. Design the projects in with smaller steps, but eventually will lead to a bigger goal. That's my second suggestion. And also transformation. It is no different from other transformation or revolutions. We need to communicate well. We need to mind about organizational change management. We need to train our people. We need to mind about responsible AI, how it's impacting the society, just like how Model 3 was very initially introduced to the world. Like we had to design how the traffic light works. What are the traffic laws that we should be designing? So don't only concentrate on the technology, but look at this whole initiative, whole revolution as a transformation. There is a lot of other factors we always have to keep in mind and build. So that's also very, very important, and we have to do it at the beginning.
Those are great points, and I think it's a terrific discussion about organizational change as well and how to use little AI to get to bigger AI and to work through the transformation of work in the process. Vivian, thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you, Peter.
So let's review some of the big takeaways from our conversation with Vivian. I thought the most important thing was her discussion about how small wins in ways that people could easily see build the case for doing bigger things. I thought it was also important to hear how sometimes maybe you don't need to automate everything, that employees can respond quicker to things which are changing all the time. But thinking about this as a transformation that has to be managed and not just as tools that we're popping in to the workplace is really an important thing. So that's all for today. Thanks so much for listening and being with us. Follow us so you don't miss an episode. Next time, I'll be sitting down with Greg Ulrich, the Chief AI and Data Officer at MasterCard. This has been Where AI Works, conversations at the intersection of AI and industry, brought to you by the Wharton School in collaboration with Accenture. I'm Peter Capelli. See you again soon.